My guest at this time is Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul. He joins me now to talk about the ongoing debate over the so-called fiscal cliff, Taxmageddon, whatever moniker you want to use. The truth is that come the start of next year, a whole lot of tax cuts are set to expire. A lot of changes in federal spending are set to hit a lot of different people, and most people in both parties believe that would be a very bad thing. The question is what to do about it. And, of course, the president wants to see tax hikes on the wealthier Americans be a major cog in this. Republicans want to see major reforms in entitlements, the tax code, and some other areas, as well as spending cuts. And, Senator, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be with you, Greg.
The president drawing a pretty clear line in the sand, the White House even doubling down on it here today, that he won't sign anything that doesn't have tax increases for the wealthiest Americans. He, of course, said that 2 years ago and ultimately relented for a two-year span. How do you expect this to play out?
Well, I'm sort of the opposite opinion of the president. I don't think it's good for the economy to squeeze more revenue out of it and send it to Washington. I think the best way to stimulate the economy is to leave more money in Kentucky, Ohio, Florida. Leave more money with the people who earned it. They will spend it more wisely. Friedman often said that nobody spends somebody else's money as wisely as they spend their own or as frugally. The productive economy is the private economy. That's where jobs come from. Government jobs are paid for when the private economy is growing. The private economy is stagnant, so the last thing you'd want to do is squeeze more money out of the private economy. What you want to do is leave more money in. So it's precisely the opposite of what we should do right now.
So what can be done to follow along with those principles before the end of the year, and then what larger steps perhaps ought to be taken at the start of next year?
If they are short of revenue, which we are, we're about $1 trillion, over $1 trillion short of revenue every year up here. It's a spending problem. I will offer an amendment that will replace the so-called tax increases the president wants with spending cuts. So I am for reducing the deficit. I'm for controlling the deficit. But instead of raising taxes, I will introduce spending cuts that will replace or equal tax increases that the president wants.
One of the things that we heard from Republican candidates in 2010, in particular John Boehner, when he was campaigning to be the next Speaker of the House and was ultimately successful, was to bring spending levels back to 2007 levels. Discretionary spending has absolutely exploded in recent years. Even after the stimulus, the levels pretty much stayed up so high, and that's why we've got the deficits we've got. What can we do about that? How much of that can we really hack away at without doing damage?
Well, what you have to do is you have to look at the entire budget. Conservatives like myself who believe that national defense is really about the most important thing we do in Washington, it is a constitutional function of our government, we still have to admit that not every dollar is sacred in the military or wisely spent, and that there is waste to be found in the military. Liberals will have to admit the same thing on the domestic side. So when the media clamors for compromise, there's some truth to that, but they've got the narrative wrong. They think compromise is raising taxes and sending more money to Washington. That's a disaster for the economy. I think the compromise is both Republicans and Democrats giving up on some of their sacred cows and admitting that spending could be reduced across the board. That also means looking at entitlements. Entitlements are two-thirds of the budget, and they're squeezing out all other spending. You have to reform entitlements or you can't balance the budget and you can't live within your means. So we do need to look at ways to save Social Security and Medicare, and that means there will be changes.
You mentioned military spending and alluded to that as one of the sacred cows potentially on the right. Do you believe that the current sequestration that is planned for defense spending is excessive? Is it where it should be, or is there a happy middle ground here somewhere?
I think there's a certain bit of irony in that many of the folks that are running around, caterwauling and their heads are exploding because the military spending might go down, they all voted for it. I didn't even vote for the military sequester, but the people who did vote for the military sequester are now the loudest ones saying, oh, we can't cut the military. If you look at the military sequester, it's $600 billion over 10 years. It's $600 billion in cuts to proposed increases in spending. If you look at spending in the military over the 10-year, even with the sequester, military spending will be higher in 10 years than it is now. Now, I won't argue that there's not a pretty significant and steep cut in the first year, but what I would argue is that military spending has doubled in the last 10 years. Our military spending is greater than all of our NATO allies combined. Our military spending is greater than all of the next 14 in line combined. So really, we are spending quite a bit. Senator Tom Coburn will release today or tomorrow, I think, $7 billion spent in the military that's not even military spending. It's just stuff that people stuck in there because they know the military budget always passes with bipartisan support. So people stick all kinds of extraneous stuff in there, and he's going to come up with a list of $7 billion that have nothing to do with national defense.
How have you talked to Democrats about this, and what, if anything, are they willing to compromise on that you've heard?
You know, I think we're somewhat at a stalemate. I know of no Democrats that do not want to raise taxes. And I think taking more money from the private sector is a bad idea. We need to leave more money in the private sector. The disconcerting thing is you're now hearing Republicans who are saying, and even conservatives, saying that, well, if taxes are going to go up $2 trillion at the end of the year if we do nothing, anything less than $2 trillion is not really a tax increase, it's a tax reduction. So we had someone at one of our caucus meetings just the other day say, well, why don't we raise $750 billion in taxes, but we'll call it a tax cut because if we do nothing and all the tax cuts expire, taxes go up by $2 trillion. So we have people saying an increase in taxes of nearly $1 trillion is really a tax cut of $1 trillion. Now, only in Washington can you come up with math that says we're going to raise taxes by $1 trillion over what they are now, but we're going to call it a $1 trillion tax cut.
Did any other Republicans like his idea?
You know, my fear is the dam is cracking and that many people, once they accept the idea that any kind of tax increase short of the tax increase that will occur when the Bush era rates expire is not really a tax increase, that sort of convoluted logic is going to lead us to a really bad, I think, outcome. And really, the people who suffer for this are the people trying to find work. It's the people who are unemployed or underemployed or kids getting out of college. You want more money in the hands of those who create jobs. You do not want more money in the hands of your politicians. It will be wasted, squandered, and counterproductive if you send it to Washington.
Sounds like you expect, not that you want this, obviously, but the odds are more in favor of Republicans backing down than both parties holding hands and jumping off the cliff.
I fully predict that some big, huge package stuffed full of everything you can imagine that's coming to the end. And it's not just this. There's probably 10 other items. I believe they'll all be stuffed into a very unsightly package and that it'll pass.
What about the idea of larger scale reform, whether it's the tax code, whether it's entitlements, as you mentioned, a big part of getting the deficits under control? Given the political climate in Washington right now, is there any chance that we're going to get major reform in a good way on these things?
Well, the thing is, there could be some good. For example, I'm more than willing to cut some deductions from millionaires, billionaires, rich people. I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to cut their deductions. But you got to do something good for the economy when you do that, and that would be cutting rates. If you cut tax rates, for example, our corporate income tax is 35%. Canada's is 15%. We can't compete, and our jobs are going to other countries because they have lower tax rates. If you'll cut our tax rates, I'm more than happy to get rid of some deductions, particularly if some people are able not to pay taxes at all. The truth of the matter, though, is Obama has framed this in a very incorrect and untruthful manner. He says the rich are not paying their fair share. The rich pay all of the income tax. Top 1% pay 40% of the income tax. Top 5% of earners pay 70% of the income tax. And if you say, if you make $75,000 a year or more, you pay 96% of the income tax. We have a very progressive tax code. So all of the president's arguments start from an incorrect presentation of the facts.
The president, during the debates in the presidential campaign, said that Romney's approach of addressing the deficit, at least in part, in a major part, through loopholes and deductions, the math just didn't work. If you combine that, though, with some of the spending cuts we've talked about, how much of a difference can closing those loopholes make?
You know, it depends on which loopholes. And one man's loophole is another man's business expense. So, I think that the bottom line, you have to look at the big picture. Do we want more money left in the hands of job creators, or do you trust Washington enough that you'd rather send more to Washington? I haven't seen any example of management in Washington of these bureaucracies that makes me think I would want any more money sent to Washington. So I won't vote to send more money to Washington. I will only vote to reduce taxes, to reduce regulations, and to make make us competitive with the world. So money will flow here, jobs will come here, companies will come here, and companies won't leave the country. But right now, there's no incentive for them to stay. Everything President Obama is doing is saying, you are not welcome here. You're welcome to go to other countries and take your jobs overseas. And that's going to be a disaster for us if he continues on this.
Last question for you, Senator. There was obviously a lot of Democratic consternation about the Ryan budget last year. His would balance in roughly 40 years. The Republican Study Committee last year had one that would balance in 7 by taking a more aggressive approach to entitlements and other spending. As you look at this, and if you could do it pretty much however you'd want to, how soon could we realistically balance our budget?
Well, my office produced a budget that balances in 5 years. The balanced budget amendment to the Constitution that all 47 Republicans in the Senate supported last year would require it to be balanced in 5 years. My point is that if you wait as long as Ryan's budget, which is some say 40, some say 28 years, but a long time, we won't even be living. So we can't guarantee that anything we sort of produce at this point will even be adhered to. I also don't think we have 40 years as a country to sustain $1 trillion annual deficit. Something's going to give before then. And my hope is that we will get started soon enough that we won't have chaos in this country. But if we continue along this path, you can destroy your currency, and that's when you have chaos.
Well, we'll see how much progress is made in the next month and a half. Thank you, sir, as always, very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.